Bankless Nation, welcome to a conversation with Anatoly Yakovenko. Recently, Solana seems to have turned a page in its evolution with the Jito airdrop putting $200 million in the hands of over 10,000 different addresses. Seems to have really reawakened a part of Solana as new addresses and new TVL have come online and new conversations are being had in Solana, mainly conversations around Solana governance and Solana economics. And so this has captured the attention of many across the crypto industry, and including my own. And so I decided just to throw Anatoly a Riverside link where we record podcasts here at Bankless and ask him to come on and just chat about things. This was a pretty unscripted conversation. Usually we have pretty thorough, robust agendas for 95% of all Bankless podcasts, but this is not one of them. This is just David and Anatoly vibing on a podcast together, talking about Solana, talking about Ethereum, talking about tribal stuff, but not with a tribal tone. So I hope you enjoy that. Before getting to the conversation with Anatoly Yakovenko, first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. Whether you're in the Ethereum tribe, you're in the Solana tribe, or you're in the Bitcoin tribe, use Kraken to get to whatever preferred destination chain of your choosing. Kraken is our preferred exchange for crypto in 2023, and if you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade, and as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. Introducing USDV, a better type of stablecoin. Currently, billions of dollars in stablecoin yield each year are paid to Tether, Circle, and other central issuers of major stablecoins. But what if yield could be shared with the protocols that use it? Those protocols, in turn, can decide how to reward their users. USDV shares its yield with a community of apps and developers that mint it. Every USDV is backed one-to-one by US Treasury bills, which pay yield. This yield flows out to the community of USDV issuers, so your protocol or app can get paid for helping end users convert other stables into USDV. This works thanks to a breakthrough technology called Color Trace from Layer 0. Without it, it was impossible to attribute users of a token with a specific issuer, but now we can. USDV is live on Ethereum, Optimism, Arbitrum, and other chains, and it's already available on over 20 exchanges such as Curve, BitGet, Velodrome, and Stargate. Start participating in the yield from treasury-backed stablecoins at bankless.com/USDV. Are you launching a token? Is it already live? How are you managing the legal and tax for providing token awards for your team? Toku simplifies everything about managing token grant compensation, and you can get started with them for free. You'll have access to top-notch legal and tax support to handle the distribution and management of tokens for your team. Toku caters to every step in the process, from user-friendly legal templates for granting tokens to tracking vesting periods and calculating withholding taxes. Toku understands every grant structure, token purchase agreement, restricted token awards, restricted token units, token options, and all the other ones. Toku is already simplifying this today for leading companies like Protocol Labs, DYDX Foundation, Mina Foundation, and many more. You can learn more about how Toku can help you streamline your token management and get started for free. Visit Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the description below. What's up, Anatoly? How's it going?
It's good, man. Good to be here.
So Solana seems to be going well.
Yeah, knock on wood. It's as surprising to me as to anyone else. Looking back over the year, I was like, oh man, okay. This is what it's gonna look like to fail. I was like psychologically preparing myself like at the start of this year, like that things were not gonna work out, but
why is that?
I mean the FTX crash. Kind of the sentiment was really, really negatively turned, and there was a lot of risk.
Right, I kind of forgot that was how this year started.
Yeah. it was like kind of like one no one like left, like, in terms of like internally, all the core engineers were like, okay, whatever, I'm coding. The problems are still like I still have to finish this. This is my job. So that was good. And for the vast majority of the companies in the ecosystem, you know, they got that like fight or flight response, and most of them chose fight and like just built better products. But that takes like a while to go from shock to like, okay, people are actually building stuff. Yeah, it was like, yeah, knock on wood, man. I don't know. I don't know how this happened.
Okay, we are like 13 months past the actual, you know, FTX incident. Call us like 12 months past, you know, being able to actually process what that meant for the crypto industry, and especially for Solana, because Solana had to especially process what that would mean for Solana. And like we could go through the gamut of the last 12 months and be like, okay, well, then there was this phase, and then there was that phase, and then there was this phase. But maybe we could just like compress it all into just like, what is now the net effect of all of that upon the Solana ecosystem? Because like you said, you had some people who just like doubled down. Some people did leave. Some people doubled down. So like, if rather than just like going through the whole like speed running of the 2023 history of Solana, just like, what's the net effect of it?
The doubling down, like, it causes like the people with less conviction to leave and people with more conviction to double down. And that is the best thing that could happen to an ecosystem. If you can survive it, the result was that you had a really core, super connected, strong group of people that had really deep convictions that just built the whole year. They just saw it as an opportunity. Now I have more space, right? Like, there's fewer noise, fewer competitors in my product category. Like, it actually is like, turned out to be like a huge win. Like, I don't think Armani would have like did Mad Lads and built the exchange. I don't think the Tensor guys would have been like, oh, we can beat Magic Eden, even though they have 90% of market share, right? Like, some people just like go hardcore when they see like, oh, this biggest competitor is now like spread across five different ecosystems. There's no way they can keep focused. That's like a once in a lifetime opportunity for some folks that have that kind of energy. And seeing them rewarded for the work that they put in, I think is like the best thing that could happen in the ecosystem, because it's really, really rewarding the people that put in the work. Like, that's like the beauty of Bitcoin and proof of work, right? Is that somehow through game theory, it anonymously does that and it's magic. And that like doesn't always work out, you know?
What would you say was the reason why, maybe this answer isn't so like the same for everyone, but why did people stay? What made people stick around Solana versus, I mean, there's like other high throughput chains that they could have gone to. Yep. Like, so what about Solana kept them there?
I think the tech is pretty weird. Like, it's very different from everyone else. And it has like some unique properties. It obviously is riskier, right? Like, you do a bunch of weird optimizations that people think look at you crazy when you do them. It takes years for them to like mature and like prove themselves out. And like the folks that are deep in the tech, they kind of get why we made those choices and they appreciated them. And like literally like the Mango guy said, okay, we'd have to like create our own chain like DYDX. That's their alternative. Or we use Solana, and like they felt that the being part of an ecosystem is better than being kind of running your own L1. So a lot of people like made the choice, I think, for that reason, for the tech reason. And I think when you have like a good group of those, like, you kind of have a lot of people around them that want to build simply because, I don't know if it's validation or like, you know, like, I want to build where a bunch of other smart people build. That's, I think, largely, you know, one of the best things about Ethereum is you like talk to Dankrat and you're like, wow, actually, this guy's super smart. How do I like work with him? It's like the best selling point of Ethereum. but like, we're starting seeing that happen on Solana, and it's not the researchers that I think are like kind of the cornerstone of Ethereum. It's more like the low level devs that like kind of can grind really cool implementations and stuff. So I think there's something to be said about that.
One of my favorite questions to ask Bitcoiners is they, and one of the reasons why is because the answer is always the same, mostly the same, depending on which Bitcoiner you ask. They always kind of more or less say the same answer. But if you ask the Bitcoiners the question, like, what's the most important element of Bitcoin that really like powers the whole system? And like the answer is so incredibly uniform. They're like, well, Bitcoin is really a semblance of many different components and technologies, and it's really about how they all come together to produce Bitcoin. But really the answer is the difficulty adjustment. Like they love the difficulty adjustment, and it's like this keystone thing that puts Bitcoin together in a way that the other components are more ancillary. So if I ask you the question, like, what is that for Solana? Is that a fair question, or is it just apples to oranges
because Bitcoin's just so different? Yeah. That's a really good question, but it's a really mm-hmm. hard one because I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have like a linchpin, like super clever thing. I think maybe the parallelism, like that we were able to figure out through like failure and experimentation, that like we were able to like get it working all the way up to the economics. I think that was a really cool innovation. But
okay, let's unpack like, then. Why is that so important and why was it so hard?
Well, like it's really non-obvious. And we basically see all these systems now that are getting inscriptions on them. Like the fees blow up because...
Like the inscription locus.
Yeah. And like what happened with Solana was effectively similar attack... not attack, but people using the chain, mm-hmm. is that instead of seeing inscription locus, we saw like the everything gets saturated to the point of like you cannot land a transaction. It was effectively liveness failures, right? Like for users. Like DeFi wouldn't operate when there's an NFT mint at the same time, right? Like so, and that was really obvious in retrospect because it's kind of like if you worked at a big web company and you have a database, you get these hotspots when like everyone wants to like order some weird thing all at the same time, but then all your other payments can't go through because there's this massive queue for something, for some random viral thing. Happens in every database system with any traction. But like it took me seeing it on chain to kind of unpack it and recognize it, that this is a problem that has a like similar computer science issue in the real world, and tying it to the economics to deal with like kind of the economics around like making sure that you can isolate only that lock. And literally we got lucky with SVM having this idea of access lists that are required with every transaction. We did that for performance reasons because that's the fastest way to build the runtime. But having that information is what allows us to do it now in every part of the stack and the economics of it itself. So kind of like it was not planned, right? Like I was like, what's the fastest possible virtual machine? I copied the designs that I knew worked in DSPs and GPUs, is that the developer does this very painful process of telling the system, this is exactly what memory I'm going to touch. So it wasn't like magic. It was not as, I mean, I had the benefit of having that experience or worked in tech for like a decade to know that that's the fastest thing. But I didn't know that this is like the most critical piece for crypto. And then when we saw those failures, we had to solve them. Or I think the idea of a single global public chain that with many shared applications all using the same state was kind of dead on arrival. Like if global fees spike, parallelism doesn't matter, right? Like right. You have one use case that saturates the whole thing. No one cares if it, how many TPS it can do. Like it's just irrelevant, right? Like, so luckily, like we did the right steps, failed the right way. And like the solution was like kind of obvious. So I think that's maybe what makes Solana unique, is we kind of, through a very long path, we found, like, I think the right answer of how to build, like, a shared permissionless system.
And that answer, what is the technical name for this? So I use the right name.
We call them local fee markets. Yeah.
Local fee markets. And that's where, like, if I'm coding up, I'll put this into, I actually just did this episode with Lucas from Jito. And so I was putting it into Ethereum terms just because, like, that's how I think. And that's probably what the listeners are familiar with. So, like, for example, if we had local fee markets on the Ethereum layer one, and you made some ARB transaction to balance Uniswap and SushiSwap, you would, like, yep. what you're saying is the developers of wherever that transaction is originating from would say, okay, I need to specify to the Solana ecosystem, to the Solana SVM, I'm going to go touch the Uniswap contract, or specifically the USDC Ether pool of Uniswap. Yep. And then I would also be touching the Ether USDC pool contract address of yep. SushiSwap. And that's the only thing that I'm touching.
Yep.
And anything else, I don't care about. And that's how we get parallelism, right? As in, like, other things can specify their things over there. And since they're not overlapping, we get parallelism. So it's local fee markets, it produces parallelism. Is that right?
Yeah. What I believe the technical term for this in database land is isolation. Mm. Is you have transaction isolation. So one transaction, another one are isolated from each other. And when you have isolation, you can execute them in parallel and have the exact same result, regardless what order they're executed in. So, but what's cool is once you do that, once you specify that in a transaction, that information is available in the mempool. So then your block producer is going to like be like, okay, I'm going to fill up the block with the highest priority fees. And if the runtime, then the virtual machine says, okay, you've saturated all the USDC uni like transactions that could hit this specific market, you cannot add any more to the block, but you still have block space for other stuff. Then the block producers can skip all the high priority fees and defer them to the next block, but then take all the lower priority ones that don't touch that saturated pool. And that's what creates this kind of like isolation and localization of fees, right? Because you have this hotspot, everyone still is greedy. Right. So they fill up the hottest market, but then they're like, well, I still have space, so why don't I take all this other stuff that is like noise or whatever? So that was the, you know, that's what we figured out had to be done for us to be able to support multiple like payments, NFTs and DeFi. Right. Like the big three use cases.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, as stretching the metaphor, even though this is apples to oranges, this is what you're saying is, if the Bitcoin, the difficulty adjustment is to Bitcoin, isolationism, parallelism, local fee markets is to Solana.
Maybe, I hope. Like, but I feel like smart people, engineers, I think everyone is probably looking at what works for Solana and is like, okay, this is how I can apply it to my technology. So we're going to start seeing, I think, that gap narrow, but crypto, man, shipping software in crypto sucks. So like what you think you can do in like 6 weeks takes 6 months, no matter what.
So I think Solana has been, I think, entering this a new phase for itself, specifically with like the Jito airdrop. There's like this before and after moment in the Jito airdrop where like you kind of had like the Solana diehards, the Solana true glassers throughout the bear market who stuck around. And now that the Jito airdrop happened, now it's attracted people who weren't previously attracted to Solana for like the economics reasons, for the incentive reasons, for like people understanding that this is kind of where the meta is. And that's one way I would describe the chapter or the phase shift for Solana. But another one is happening just like with some of the fundamentals here, which is like Firedancer is now a second client. Jito itself is a second client. Maybe there's other clients coming online as well. And so this is now, once you have multiple clients, you now have the governance conversation. And so there seems to be like a lot of couple turnings of pages all kind of happening at the same time, making it seem like there's a kind of a before after moment for Solana as it relates to like the last like 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to see. Like, I mean, so Firedancer is a complete rewrite. Jito is another distribution of the Solana Labs client, but it does all the human bus factor kind of problems. You have now multiple points of failure, and that creates the governance problems. It's like, how do we make sure that like changes that Jito makes don't break mainnet, changes that Labs make don't break Jito, and don't delay Firedancer? Like, everyone's got to talk. This is why I'm writing more docs. Mm-hmm. Alignment is now a thing. How do I get all of these like engineers that like are experts in the deep part of the stack that they're in, way deeper than me at this point, don't like all spread in different directions and make sure that there is like kind of one horizon roadmap that we're working towards? That's definitely a new problem, but it's a good problem to have. It means that like you know, people, it means you have a lot of people trying to move the ship.
Mm-hmm. So like coming from Ethereum land, there's all of this like infrastructure set up around Ethereum governance, right? You're like, you have the biweekly all core devs call. Now it's split into two calls, the EL call and the CL call. There's like the Ethereum magicians forums. What does this kind of like coordination infrastructure look like, Solana, or is that kind of still getting built?
There's a call Jacob Creech runs. There's a validator call to kind of more like DevOps system stuff. There's a specific core developer call between all the teams. There's a Discord with all the different channels for different teams. And kind of like, there's now a SIMD process, Solana improvement documents he posts on GitHub. Everyone reviews them. All that stuff is getting, that was there before, but now people, like, it was good that we kind of like had set these things up, but people are now using them because then there's a necessity to use them. Like, setting this stuff up is easy, right? Like, it just takes one person to run them, but none of it matters until you have like a critical mass of people that don't know what the hell is going on. So mm-hmm. Then they're forced to talk. There's usually smart people. They go and they're like, well, who do I talk to? Where do I find? Who do I talk to? And you kind of start mm-hmm. seeing that happening.
I think the interesting thing that I'm seeing is like Solana, the archetype of Solana is super strong. It's like these low level systems engineers, these database designers like yourself. And now with this like whole phase change of Solana, the evolution of Solana into something greater is now needing a new archetype, which is like the governance archetype. And I like the Solana engineering archetype, I'm not sure has a lot of just like governance muscle, because I don't think most people have governance muscles by default. Like, I think Ethereum has attracted the governance nerd snipes because that's kind of what it is. But I don't know if the engineers have a lot of governance muscle about them.
So I think, I don't know if this happened in Ethereum, but I think out of necessity, you kind of start building like a constitution or a motto. Right. Mm-hmm. And for Ethereum, it was like cheapest possible hardware. Like, how do we make this like verifiability as accessible as possible? And everyone mm-hmm. that's building always thinking about that. And for me, I'm trying to drill into everyone. How do you make it faster? Like, just what is like when you're like have 50 different options and you got to pick one or the other, which one is like more scalable, faster, scales on more cores. And that's forcing all the discussions to kind of like pick out of the set of like permutations of every configuration. Like, okay, we should go down this path. And this is a way I think that like, it's like a religious mantra, right?
Yeah, everyone repeats. It's the Solana North Star. It's yeah. Solana alignment.
Right. Right. Exactly. And this is not to knock on Ethereum in any way. I think like, once you get to a certain size of the ecosystem, I think you kind of have to pick that, like, what's the core Pareto efficient spot that we're staking out and, like, have everyone aligned towards that. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, Bitcoin picked its own spot, yeah. right? And it's worked out for them. Like, right. you know, despite of all the criticism that everyone throws at Bitcoin Core and the community, it's still, like, pretty successful, right? I wouldn't believe it if Solana got there, right? It would be like crazy in my mind.
So wait, what would you say is Bitcoin's North Star? Because I have my answer. I just want to hear yours.
I think it's the fossilization of the supply cap, that it's like the yeah, immutability of it. Cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like the whole idea of like, you get a piece of something that no one can change and you can like hide in your bunker and
right.
like count
property
the bits
rights,
in your yeah. ledger, right? Like mm-hmm. in your air gapped, whatever cold storage you can. Yeah. I think
when it comes to like tribal wars in the crypto space, I think like, And honestly, even some Bitcoiners will point at this and be like, yo, that doesn't work in the fullness of time, right? Like, I think Nick Carter and Hazu were famous Bitcoiners, and Nick Carter's still a Bitcoiner, you know? But they'll point at the supply cap and be like, yeah, eventually you just drive off the cliff with that. And so like there's some North Stars actually, explode, if you will, before they actually get there, right?
Not if you have inscriptions and gaslight is good enough.
Man, inscriptions break and solve everything.
Yeah, God.
Okay, so what are some of the more important conversations going on in Solana land these days? Because there's the governance conversation, but what else is there?
I think like the trade-offs with like fixing like bugs and improvements versus Firedancer shipping faster. Those are like real hard questions. Like, because I think we have some obvious flaws that are not, that haven't like caused a catastrophic failure yet, but like stuff like the storage fees are like hard coded. And as the price of SOL goes up, it becomes more expensive, right? And that impacts developers. And at some point, like the easy solution is like, okay, there's a governance, effectively hard fork process to lower the hard code number until the actual solution is shipped after Firedancer. It's just like engineers don't like that because it's we know the bug, we want to fix it, right? So there's like this like need to like fix the wrinkles and stuff, but you also have to coordinate. So I think like tons of discussions like that are basically all swirling around. Like, I know what the problem is, like, how do we solve it? But how do we also make sure that Firedancer ships? Because having, to me, in my mind, that reducing the single points of failure of the code base is the most important thing right now to really like.
How would that thing actually like, how is that a single point of failure? The storage costs?
No, like the not having like the single Solana code base is a single point of failure. Having Firedancer out is the highest priority. Right. So like, but fixing problems in the runtime requires both teams to solve them. And like us, you know, like even though we know what the problem is, if we're like, okay, there's a solution, it'll only take 6 weeks to implement, but then Firedancer is going to be six weeks later.
Right. Yeah. And then the worry is that there's in that 6 weeks of time is a 6 weeks longer amount of time in which there's a single Solana client with a potential like service area for a catastrophic bug. Understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my view is that like we do the alignment conversations now. We have the design, the North Star. This is how everything should work. But ship Firedancer as fast as possible and then start doing the work. And that's okay. I think like for everything that crypto needs this year, I believe Solana is scaled to meet the demand. So like my view is that like we can delay the improvements until Firedancer's out and then like, but like it's really good to like have the design discussions now, poke all the holes in them. And like that would actually be awesome if we had like like did all the work that we're, you know, that we were supposed to do 3 years ago, but like we can do it now and have like a really good design that everyone agrees on.
Wouldn't it be good if you have some of these like updates that are, call it like low hanging fruit that everyone has an agreement on? Wouldn't it be good to like ship Firedancer and then be like, okay, we have this agreement on this direction for this smaller code change, but now we have two systems that we need to update. It can be like kind of a test net for governance across multiple clients.
Yep. That's basically like kind of the process that's happening. Yeah. And the Firedancer folks are awesome. They're developing some of these optimizations on their own because they kind of like see where we only went halfway and they're like, why didn't you guys do that? And I'm like, well, we had to ship. We wouldn't be talking to you. And like, and then they're like, okay, so we'll do the R&D and figure out how fast the difference is. So it's cool to see them do all this work.
Okay, so let's, there'll be a handful of these throughout this conversation, I think. So I'll pull out, here's an Ethereum perspective on Firedancer maybe you can debunk or provide the alternative opinion or perspective on. When I see Jump Crypto making a Solana client and the Solana community is like, oh, Firedancer is the best thing since sliced bread, and Jump Crypto, who is like famously extractive, totally probably like the right people for the job because you want the high frequency traders to make the high frequency client. That makes total sense. But then from the alternative side of things is like, I don't want these people who are masters at extraction to build the extraction client. That gives me the heebie-jeebies. What would you say to this?
First of all, in the world of finance, right, the exchanges are the extractors. somebody like Jump pays like an arm and a leg to operate at an exchange, and they put their capital at risk. And with their brain power, they try to minimize latency of all the world's information, all the noise, find all the right signals, and as quickly as possible, get them to the exchange. And the exchange has just been there because somebody's uncle traded pork, you know, 1,000 years ago or whatever, right? They're not doing shit. So in my view, like, there is like value creation happening at the Jump level. And I think what these systems that we're building, the permissionless open marketplaces, do is they equalize the access. So now me as a hobbyist, I can compete with Jump without having to pay the exchange an arm and a leg. So that I think is like cool, and will actually both Jump, I think, wants this because they're competitive, and two, I think it'll actually compress the fees all across finance because there's more competition. The other side of it, I think, is that it's all open source code. Like literally, like it is a bunch of Apache 2.0 code. You can go look at it. There is no magic. If Jump do this, like, right? Like, and then everyone has access to it across the ecosystem and across a crypto, right? So all the optimizations they do can actually, like, if they're interesting, apply them to Ethereum. Like, so from my perspective, I think it's kind of like silly. Like, it's just like the silliest arguments. It's just code, right? Like, it doesn't matter who wrote the code. I think the more interesting one, is there a direction that Jump can influence Solana to where it creates an environment where there can somehow be more extractive?
As in governance?
Yeah. Like, well, direction of the protocol. Like, I think governance, like, is not going to be stake-weighted, but I think core engineers have a lot of influence, right? Like, sure. Linus has a lot of influence on Linux, even though he's just one dude. Like, he gets to make a lot of big design decisions. Is there like a directional like place where Jump could push Solana to where it somehow gives an advantage to incumbents like Jump and Citadel and like displaces hobbyists or whatever? That's a more interesting question. And like, what is that technology choice? What would that even look like? Right? Like, so I think this is where like, I think the community should be like serious, right? About like, what are we building? Does it actually improve access and stuff like that? I think it's pretty unlikely, just talking to the Jump folks. They're like hardcore engineers. I don't think you can like even convince Kevin Bowers to like, okay, make guide the architecture towards this place where we will extract more value. They're like, dude, what, you're wasting my time.
They're not like puppet masters. They're
Yeah. I think that's like very far-fetched. But like, I think it could accidentally get there. And that's like a more interesting discussion. And we should like be like constantly thinking about it. Like, is the technology that we're building, does it like allow like, you know, like me, when I graduated college, I was like trading on all of these dinky exchanges, but my connectivity sucked. I didn't have access to data. Everything was terrible. Like, I don't want that to happen to like the next Anatoly, right? Like, maybe that guy figures out and like does a better job than Jump. Cause like, this is where innovation comes from, is people that don't know that they're competing against the best, right? They just, So like,
I do get the argument that like with the appropriate tech platform, the middle ground, the arena, if the arena is appropriately like engineered and architected in a way that like Junk Capital only has so much more of an edge over like the average Joe Schmo, that's great. However, like, they will have economies of scale. They employ people to do good work, to do good jobs, to succeed at their jobs. And so, like, it's great that we are taking down the silos of exchanges and we are making those decentralized and open. And so, that centralization force, that power capture extraction venue is eliminated and now like distributed through a more decentralized ecosystem. That's great. But then it kind of just creates a new kingmaker, right? Which is whoever can play those markets the best. So now that the markets, the walls around the markets are down, but the players are now the new leaders, if you will. And so, but it's like, kind of like,
But if real work, right? If they're like looking at all of the world's information, synthesizing it as fast as possible and like picking the highest priority things and pricing it correctly. And like, if they're doing the work, why shouldn't they earn some of the return? Like me as a hobbyist, I can do that work too, right? And I can find because the world is so big and is massive and it's a very long curve of events that happen. There's no way Jump or anyone else can capture all of it. It's just too big. I always believe like that I could always find an edge if I work hard enough. I could like compete with them on one particular segment of the market, beat them, and then grow my own business, right? And then like eventually get to their level to where I am, don't spend time on like the little the edge cases and or worry only about the big markets that I care about. Like I think that's just like normal competition. Like as long as the access is free and open to everyone globally, I think that's fine. At least I don't see like a fundamental problem with it, or like one that like defeats the purpose of like open permissionless networks.
Yeah, I guess the concern is a point taken for sure. I guess the concern is just like increasing the scale of capital begetting capital. Like how fast does the best trader on Solana accrue more rewards faster than like the medium trader on Solana? And if that gap is large, then we're concerned. But if that gap isn't that large, and then to what you're saying, just like, well, at some point they are doing real work. They are shifting the state of Solana to map the state of the real world, and that is valuable.
We'll see, right? Like, I think like folks that are trying to think about how do they capture, I mean, this is like the problem. How do we capture MEV in the protocol, right? People trying to find solutions to this, I think it's unsolvable. Like, so you're going to have like, I think the Ethereum approach, which is through crypto economics and auctions and a slow chain that can run this. And I think you're going to see the Solana approach is like physics. How do we make the chain so fast that it's physically impossible for like information to travel around the world? And then like you have localization and like the physical forces basically kind of force a certain fairness. Like I can submit my transaction to the block producer that's closest to me. And that means that like the amount of information that thing can evaluate is only local to me, and it doesn't have like full control of the global state no matter what happens. So like, can we like cut the latencies that low? And if we can, then like it'll be cool to see which one's better, right? Like maybe Solana's worse. Maybe Ethereum captures more value for Ethereum, but the prices to the users are worse. Who knows, right? Like I don't know, right? Like we'll see what happens.
I think that is a pretty solid way to kind of differentiate the strategies between Ethereum and Solana, where Ethereum is trying to like maximize in protocol value capture, whereas Solana, maybe this will be my description, correct me if I'm wrong, but Solana is like trying to outrace MEV. It's just trying to go faster than it. The first thing you learn about MEV is that there's actually no eliminating it. You can only just like transfer it elsewhere.
Yep.
And Ethereum is like, well, we're going to go be slow and expensive, and we're going to capture all of that value, and it's going to be placed into Ether. And Ether is desired to be this highly decentralized distributed asset that everyone has access to. One of the easiest things you can do in crypto is buy Ether, and all of a sudden you have exposure to Ethereum fees and Ethereum MEV. And Solana, on the other side of things, is like, well, we're just going to have block times that are so incredibly fast that someone captures it by the time that information permeates to the other side of the world, which does. One thing I did learn is like small blocks, fast block times, is actually a mechanism to lower total MEV, but it just kind of displaces it into like latency games. But I think what the Solana theory or Solana strategy is that like, well, those latency games will happen in like a local part of the globe, and those games won't be global games, they'll be local games.
And those people are doing work, they're racing, right? And then like, if the message bus that they're all synchronizing on is the fastest one there, then it's creating value for the whole world, because then if I'm on the other side of the world, I get this reference point that's most trusted. And in theory, if the way that it's this message bus is really valuable, the token that, you know, prevents spam and this message bus should accrue some of the value. But again, I don't know. These are big unknowns. We'll see. This is like, I think the hardest part is like figuring out what happens when these systems scale and like really take over real finance. Like right now, what do we have? Like dog coins and NFTs and inscriptions. And it's almost like, honestly, it's the perfect amount of risk. It's like risky, but but like we're not risking the global economy. Like there's enough skin in the game that everyone's taking it seriously and trying to like do their best job. But it's, you know, it's still humans writing software. It's not going to like, doesn't matter if dog money like fails or not.
Yeah, it is real capital, but at least inside of it, it's in a doggy container.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, not a pension container.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So, the incoming bull market, which I think everyone has assumed that we're getting, Solana activity reaching new heights, I think. Pretty close. Yeah. Does the future influx of a bunch of new users scare you?
So like we had 2 million active accounts with Stepin during its peak. And what I learned is that like these kind of like hyper economically incentivized users have a steep onboarding and then a steep drop off if the activity they're doing is not like creating daily value or something like that. And these like economic kind of bursts, like you'll have like, what's cool is that I think these users are like basically like already crypto users. They all have seed phrases. And you can see that like once somebody figures out how to deal with any wallet, they can switch relatively easily, right? Their mental model is already set up for this. And this is what I believe is like the key part of like the growth in crypto industry is how many people figure out a seed phrase is like the total number of addressable users. And then after that, like, it's just, I think the switching costs of somebody installing an extension, one or the other, are pretty minimal. So I think you can see that like all the pieces are there. And if the only thing that we figured out are speculative, like kind of economically incentivized games, I don't think it'll last. But if we figure out some real world use cases that create value for those users, they'll be stickier and they'll stick around. And I think the latter is still unproven. And I hope that this bull cycle is the one where like real world applications kind of get some traction, like a payments thing or something, right? Like Helium, I feel like is infra that I feel like the users that are using it are not going to like be crypto users. They're Helium network users. I think the idea that you can get tokens for creating a quality of the map is at least enough to onboard them to a wallet and get a seed phrase. But like, I want like a Venmo. why can't we have a crypto Venmo that's global? Mm-hmm. Everyone's sending each other real currencies, euros, dollars, and it works. Like something like that where it's useful. So this is my biggest worry. Like, I look at the numbers, I'm glad it's happening, and like, I'm glad that the network's not falling over while it's happening even more, that the fees are not spiking. That's like, pat myself on good engineering. But like, we need to see real world use cases that I feel like are sticky to the point that users aren't going to leave.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of like the identity crisis that I'm seeing unfold for the entire industry, kind of in slow motion, is like, everyone's realizing that like, it was really fun to build insular apps for like almost a decade now. And also we've gotten every single person nerd sniped about crypto who would ever be nerd sniped about that. And now if we're ever going to like, you know, get further reaches, it has to take a new kind of app. But that's not even like a Solana, Ethereum, you know, Polkadot, Cosmos conversation. That's just like a, yo, what can we really do with crypto conversations? And like, there's differing perspectives as to like how far crypto can go. In terms of its utility, right? Are you a reader of Polenia's blogs at all?
No.
You know Polenia, you know the
oh, he's yeah.
They're more Ethereum aligned.
I've read his
writer.
Blogs.
So they think that like the case for crypto use cases is actually like much smaller than what everyone in like crypto land is giving credit for. Cause they're like, okay, look at the utilities. It's Bitcoin and Ether as store values. It's stable coins for payments. And that's about it. And everything
else. But isn't he arguing for 1 million L2s? as well in the same breath?
That I can't remember a specific blog writing about okay. that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
I think he might be more in the fewer number of larger L2s, like okay. one like yeah. a power law of layer 2s. Yeah. But I yeah. think he is I think they are definitely like an app chain thesis person, but more for like I think gaming chains. I'm starting to put words in their mouth. So like okay. games get their own chains, for okay. example. But beyond that, I think it's like power law distribution for layer 2s. Anyways, the conversation I was bringing up is just like I think like crypto is kind of and it swings between pendulums of like optimism and pessimism, right? Like on the optimistic side of things, we have like, oh, we can tokenize everything. We can tokenize blockchains and supply chains, and we can, you know, map the world. And there's going to be a token. Everything's going to be a token economy. And then on the other side of things, it's like, you know, Bitcoin maximalism, extreme conservatism is like, no, there's only one blockchain. It does one thing, which is produce Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is money. And all other utility is just like a complete farce. And I think depending on where you fall in this spectrum, you kind of find yourself in different like ecosystems of crypto. And I would definitely place Solana on the more optimistic version of the yeah. crypto utility.
It's hyper right? optimistic.
Like, hyper optimistic.
I feel like if the Western world doesn't accept crypto as an industry, Solana's worth it's like useless. No one's gonna care. Like the only reason to have a high throughput, low cost chain is if it like is adapted like at the consumer level to like normal voting citizens, like use mm-hmm. it on a daily basis, right? Like otherwise, what's the point? So like, I feel like, yeah, I'm hyper optimistic, I would say. I feel like legally it'll be like basically enshrined and we'll have some way to operate and launch decentralized systems and all this stuff will happen. Every bank is going to have a stable coin and yada, yada, yada. But like, yeah, I think, I don't know. I think like if, I also think in that world, something like Bitcoin or the ultrasound money like narrative where you have like the cockroach chain mm-hmm. is really important because it kind of forces the question. Like if you, right. if the cost to shut down Bitcoin in the Western world is Orwellian, like it requires massive surveillance and interruption of normal people's lives. It's too far politically difficult. And that forces the question for people to be like, okay, fine. Here's your box. Right. Go do it.
Right. Are you like, saying that like people are realizing that they'll never be able to shut down Bitcoin? And so therefore like, well, if we're not going to shut down Bitcoin, we might as well just like keep Ethereum and then we'll keep Solana and we'll just keep all the less hardened ones too.
I think it's they can shut it down, but if it requires so much political capital, right? So right. much, such a huge invasion of privacy and individual right. liberty that it's not politically viable. That means mm-hmm. that it's not going to be shut down because we still, I believe, live in like a fairly representative world, and that forces the conversation to be like, okay, if it's not practical to shut down Bitcoin, then what are the green lines, right, for all this stuff? Mm-hmm. So like that's kind of like, I don't know, Solana's cheating, right? We're like, okay, Bitcoin survives, Ethereum survives. Here's a really fast blockchain that gives you trust minimization, but requires data centers and all that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like Solana's like the third kid that the two older kids like are watching yep. their parents just treat way nicer than they were yep. ever treated Bitcoin and Ethereum, and they're both like, why aren't you bullying the third kid as hard?
Exactly.
one like phase change in Ethereum land, or like development milestone of Ethereum. I always kind of like look at these systems as like literal kids, children sometimes, like Bitcoin, older brother Bitcoin. Bitcoin's like probably in college, maybe about to graduate from college. Ethereum is like entering college. Solana's like still middle school, high school somewhere. But Ethereum went through this one like development milestone when it had its whole like Tornado Cash OFAC moment, where that was like a big growing up moment for Ethereum. Yep. Like it was no longer like dog tokens and Ponzi games. It was like, yo, you are infiltrating the space of the most powerful office in the land, which is just like the Department of Defense, Department of Treasury, like threatening the dollar, threatening global security of the United States. And then all of a sudden you saw like the OFAC ruling go out about Tornado Cash is now you can't touch that. And then we saw like 85% censored blocks on Ethereum inside of a span of a few short months. And all the Bitcoiners are like, oh, told you Ethereum was totally like, you know, not ready to fight nation states. And then the percentage of OFAC censored blocks on Ethereum has now been down only ever since that moment, down to 33%. And now I would call it that. That's in Ethereum's rear view mirror. It's successfully like passed that milestone. And, you know, watching Solana enter its economics and governance phase of its development, which is the part that like really interests me. Eventually, I'm like, well, if all of the Solana community wants Solana to have the successes that they want it to have, it will one day enter that very big conversation of like threatening nation state powers. How close do you think we are? And what do you think the Solana system ecosystem is ready for this? Like, what do you think about this?
I'm not ready for it because I'm just an engineer.
I bet you are.
I have no clue how to deal with this. I will be like, man, that's the stuff that like really churns my stomach and that I'm terrified of because I don't know what to do. I would like reach out to Coin Center and be like, what do we do? Help. Yeah. I think like at the same time, I have very, very strong beliefs that like, the West where we live, it's the place of freedom. Like my parents fled the fucking Soviet Union and like, I want to protect it, right? Against bad actors. I will do everything I can to like stop bad actors from like preventing me to pursue happiness in the United States. It's like a beautiful thing to be able to like work on whatever I want and do like learn whatever I want and say whatever I want, right? In the US. So like, I don't know. Like these are like the really hard questions. I hope it's that those decisions come as far into the future as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the trajectory maps on, like Solana is like one cycle behind Ethereum, Ethereum's one cycle behind Bitcoin. It would, if the trajectory continues, it would generally like if enough stable coins find themselves on Solana and there's enough apps with you know, like holes in them that have high TVL, it's going to attract like the dubious actors, such as like the Lazarus Group, which is going to like, that's going to happen. That's wouldn't that happen at the tail end of this bull market?
Yeah, I hope not. this is like terrifying.
we can brush terrifying. That one under the rug and circle back around that in like 2 years.
Yep.
With MetaMask Portfolio, swapping tokens on-chain has never been easier. Swap tokens at any time with the most competitive pricing around. The MetaMask Portfolio swap feature allows you to swap tokens directly by aggregating and comparing various decentralized exchanges to ensure you get competitive prices and low network fees. Choose the token you want to swap from and what you want to swap into and tap into combined liquidity across providers all automatically. Within MetaMask Portfolio, you can easily swap tokens with low fees, fewer approvals, and slippage protection for all of your trades. Manage your Web3 everything at metamask.io/portfolio.
Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas using ERC20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow at Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Well, one thing that's I've been noticed going on is the Bonk token. Actually, let's start with Bonk. What the hell is Bonk?
This was like a project launched by Nom and a bunch of like random ecosystem devs and like participants, right when like kind of the whole narrative storm was happening last year, like literally 1 year ago. D-Gods left, Solana, Magic Eden announced they're going multi-chain, Phantom announced they're going multi-chain, all like in 1 week.
Right.
Everything was in the dumpster, and these kids launched Bonked, and like it was a hit. Like, it's a dog coin. I mean, like, the only purpose is to like send somebody 669 420 Bonk and laugh about it. Like, what else? It has no other purpose beyond that, right? So, like, but like for whatever reason, I think maybe because it was launched at that like worst possible moment and like people had nothing else to do, it like just was kind of like, okay, I guess we'll do Bonk. And that became a hit.
Was it in response to like people leaving the ecosystem? It was like, hey, we're going to need this for the people sticking around.
I don't know. I honestly don't know the motivation, but it felt like, it also felt like the bear market was already well underway, right? Like, so people were like kind of itching, looking for an excuse, and like the events, like the FTX collapse and everything, it was just such a bottom that maybe, like, I don't know. Maybe that was the motivating trigger. I don't know. Like, I don't fully comprehend how these things work, how dog coins work.
Okay, so, but why did Bonk become Bonk? So they made Bonk, but like, why did it become what it is?
Well, I think like everyone was experiencing very shared trauma all at the same time. And everyone was plugged in online looking for the next terrible news to drop, right? And like nobody else had anything else to do. Like you just had this like dog coin. So I guess we're doing like, I don't know. It's bizarre like how these things catch virality. Like it's just what makes something viral, I think, is like, I don't know, I'm an engineer. If I knew, I'd be doing something else.
Okay, so how did Bonk like permeate throughout Solana? Like why do so many Solana people have Bonk?
They did like a big airdrop across all the NFT communities, and Solana like users are pretty NFT heavy. Like even I like have bought NFTs and stuff. So like they did a really good job filtering for Sybils and kind of looking at like active people with like NFTs, incredible communities and stuff. And like did this whole like distribution process, and for whatever reason, it like just didn't go to zero. I don't know why, but like that gave people like this influx of like, oh, this thing is like worth something and it's kind of happening. And like it caught fire. I don't know why or how, but like it got a little virality like a year ago. And then like everything else, like everything was contracting rapidly after that. Like I think we kind of survived that moment. Like Vitalik saved Solana, right, with that tweet or something like that. It was like Vitalik and Bonk at the same time happened and kind of like breathed some life into us long enough for like devs to go start shipping more products. And like they just continued building integrations into like every DeFi marketplace, every NFT project, and like kept talking about it, and like the community just wouldn't die. And I think as Mad Lads happen and Backpack launch and like kind of the all the announcements around Breakpoint, like you just saw that the ecosystem was alive. I don't know if that's the reason why Solana got back in the news or like in the positive like cycle, but like that's the only explanation that makes sense to me is like the devs shipped a bunch of products, they attracted users, and that kind of starts the ball rolling. Yeah.
The meme was like just meme-y enough with the right amount of fundamental. Yeah. Because it seems like Bonk has like a lot more of the spirit of Solana in it than like Shiba Inu has anything about Ethereum. Like the Shiba Inu community and the Ethereum community are like those Venn diagrams don't overlap. But the Bonk and Solana ecosystems, those are like pretty strongly overlapping.
I think it's because the devs are plugged into the NFT developers and like... Mm. A lot of the developers on Solana, like there's like two groups, the Jerry's Ellipsis people that are like the super DeFi nerds and Mev nerds like Jito. And then there's the NFT people that are like Metaflex and all these other monkey business and D-Gods even. But like they're all like kind of building web tools and a bunch of stuff that are fun for people to use. And there's some intersection between them, but there's clearly like two different kind of devs. And like, I think the Bonk folks were really plugged into both and they were able to just kind of like connect both of these. Like, I don't know.
It's the campfire between the two parties.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, okay. So, but there's a bunch of Bonk on all the Solana phones. How did that happen?
That was like one of the theories that we had is that like we basically get NFT like everyone gets this phone. It's a pain in the ass to ship apps to the big app stores. But if the phones have like NFT drops and stuff like that, then the kind of people that get the phone will self-select to be the people that care about those things. And that means then developers can ship apps to like a target rich environment, even though it's small, but a target rich one of NFT consumers and folks like that. So we like talk to every NFT project and like Klaynos and, you know, we talk to the devs from Bonk, like, can you guys do like a small airdrop? It was like $10 or something at the time. So
just as a perk to have the phone.
Yeah. It was not like, there's no like master plan there to like, oh, the price of Bonk is going to pass the price of the phone. And
okay, so has that happened? Because, okay, so like during the bear market.
During the bear market, nobody cared. Nobody cared Bonk's about the phone. Bonk's worth
nothing. Yeah.
Bonk's worth nothing. We were selling like 20. It was weird. We were selling like 20 to 30 phones a day, kind of trickling them out. And it's like weirdly because it's like, okay, there's traction. Most DeFi protocols are not gaining 20 to 30 users every day. But you need to sell 20,000. That's going to take years to get there.
So didn't the Solana phone project like sunset formally and then the Bonk token price like jumped?
No, we had like the team. We didn't sunset it. The team is there. We like kind of went into cockroach mode, like, how do we like figure out what to do with it and like get people excited about it, but like spend the least amount to like extend runway for that team. So like what happened, I think, is like right after Breakpoint, we started sales kind of doubled or tripled. So we were like selling 50 to 75, which is great, but like it was still pretty slow. And then Bonk kind of took off and then for like people realize, oh man, the Bonk airdrop is now worth like half the phone. I think that's like, okay, the phone is effectively half price, right? Like, or like if you have some Bonk, you could literally sell it, buy the phone and get the phone to like equalize, right? Like, so you still had to go like spend money to get this phone. So even though like, even if it's worth like 10, 20 bucks, it's going to take 10 days to deliver. Rationally, I don't think any person would be like, I'm going to get 10% more Bonk in 10 days.
It's not about the arb of Bonk.
Yeah. It never went off like twice as much or 10x as much as the price of the phone to where the arb makes sense. It was like maybe 10 to 20% more. So like enough people got it like or got excited about it to sell out. So in one day, we sold like 15,000 units, which is bizarro. So imagine
what was like the next highest day that you had prior to that?
Yeah, like maybe 50 or 75 50 or something. No, like I think we sold like at the start, we sold like a couple hundred in the first day. What was funny is that like literally I was on Laura Shin's podcast earlier. It was like, yeah, we only sold 2,500. I don't know what we're going to do next. We're trying to figure out. So like, and then there were like all these articles, Solana phone is a flop. Like, and literally 3 days later, we sell 15,000 of them. But like now, I don't know what to do either. Like, I think this is like the big question. Like, people are kind of treating it as an NFT, like a, kind of like a club. And there's now devs shipping apps. Like the interest in terms of shipping apps is like 10x. The amount of airdrops that folks are getting or receiving is like kind of really picked up. So that thesis is working. But like to compete with Apple or Google in any meaningful way, you need to sell a million phones.
Right.
Is this enough of a signal to go try to like the next stage would be like 100 to 200,000? Like, is this enough of a signal to try to do the next stage? I mean, like, honestly, prior to this, percent chance of us getting to that level was like 0.1. Now it's like 5.
Just 5% like is pretty good.
Yeah, a massive improvement. So like it's probably worth it for us to continue, but we still have to like figure out what that looks like, how long it's going to take, costs, what's the form factor. Is a shipping hardware is awesome. Like when you get this, you like work for a year and you like optimize and you build this very complex device and you can hold it in your hands like a real product and like you think it's awesome and you get it out and there some reviewer is like, hey, it's mediocre.
Yeah, the MHKBU, the YouTuber. Yeah, it's like Solana phone. It's bad. I remember that. Yeah.
So like it's great because it's so much work and it's so intricate and it's like all of human civilization has built out all these technologies for you to like ship this phone. So it's really, really cool. But like, you'll always just like in one like review, it'll be like, ah, psh, it's crap. It sucks.
If the Solana phone does take off as a result of this like bonk airdrop that's associated with every single phone, and it also like meaningfully disrupts like Apple or Google, it will be the greatest, most like it's facetious bizarre crypto story I could ever have. You couldn't have written that.
Yep. Yeah. It would be bizarre. It's like we live in a simulation then. Like I think that's definitive proof.
Okay. So wait, so how does the airdrop per phone work? Because the airdrop of bonk supply eventually runs out. So like some phones won't have bonk in the future or like what's the details?
I mean, like
that?
If we ship another phone, it'd be another device. Like you would have a different Genesis token. It'd be like a different product. There's the 20,000 sagas that get made, that's it. Like that manufacturing line has been shut down. Like we can't even ship anymore.
Okay.
So like we'd have to build another product and then figure out how that thing's going to work.
Right.
But like the goal, I think
so all
the
Solana Genesis phones are sold out.
Yep.
Okay. Cause you said you sold like 50,000 in one day, right?
No, 15.
15,000. Okay.
Yeah.
And so the D-Gens just bought them up to the limit.
Yeah, that's all sold out.
Oh, amazing. All right, bizarre. Well, congrats. Hey, congrats for selling out the Solana phone.
Yeah, bizarre. Yeah, Solana phone is sold out. It was not a flop. But now, like, I think, now we have to figure out what to do next.
Right, because, like, I think if you're going to make another phone, you have to ask, like, can you get Lightning to strike twice? Because, like, you sold the phone because of the bonk airdrop, not because of the phone, right?
But the question is, like, if you have an app store, enough devs will ship to where the probability of Lightning is 100%, right? Like, that's kind of, like, the theory. And having an app store that's crypto first is like we own our own destiny, right? Like we're not beholden to the Apples and Googles. Right. You can do whatever. It's awesome. Right. Like this is like the biggest unlock I think we could possibly have. So if it's possible, if you can get the users to actually like get the phone, use it for crypto stuff and like, it'd be really, really cool.
I think one of the conversations that I've seen happen in a number of different places, I think the first time I've heard this was just getting dinner with John Charbonneau. And he just kind of gave me the thought experiment of like, imagine if friend.tech was built on Solana, not Base. And imagine what that would have done to the Solana narrative when friend tech took off. And this was like 2 months ago. So this was a while ago. And like listening to that thought experiment, I'm like, oh yeah. Like imagine how loud the Solana community would be on Twitter if it was friend tech on Base, not on Solana. Like the entire narrative of Solana would have just like pivoted in an absolute heartbeat. And that was like, you know, 3 months ago, 2 months ago when friend tech was a thing. And then I was also having a conversation with Chris Berniski, who's somewhere along those same lines, just like the, and this was after Sol price goes from 20 to 70 something dollars and like the narrative shifts, the meta shifts towards Solana, where he goes like, yeah, yeah, Solana just is a pretty strong bet for like where a breakout consumer crypto app actually lands in this next like wave of adoption. Like if it's going to be one space where that consumer app is built, the Solana is the best like risk to war to place your bets. And so it would be great, Anatoly, if we had a breakout consumer app, because we haven't really had one. We kind of had one with FriendTech and now it's kind of like died. What are your odds that the crypto industry, Solana or not, the crypto industry produces a breakout consumer app in like, say, the next like 2 years?
I'm an optimist. So I'm going to say like 90%, 95%. Okay. I think these like next 2 years are going to be pivotal. And like, I think you should see a consumer application that's like legitimate. Mm-hmm.
It does Stepin count as a legitimate consumer application?
If it like stuck around, I had this theory that maybe people are like, basically like, if I'm paying my trainer, you know, like $50 an hour, that I would rather use the incentives that I'm getting from like the dopamine hook to the kickers and trading and stuff for me to run. If those are basically equivalent to what I get out of a trainer, then some segment of the population would just continuously use Stepin. But I don't know it feels like that probably didn't like fully land. But there was like a theory, right? Like the value that I'm getting out of it is the exercise. And the motivation that I'm getting out of it is the crypto games that I get to play with the NFTs and the tokens and stuff. Because that's pretty engaging for the brain, right? Like if I wake up and look at the prices and the competitiveness, I spent like countless hours on this, on like Ultima Online trading like random resources that nobody cares about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you could get those same hooks into somebody and force them to work out, it's a value add for the world. but I don't know if that played, it didn't seem like that played out. So I don't know if that's like the play to earn, learn to earn kind of things.
Right.
Are the right meta. We'll see. But like, who knows?
Yeah. Token inspired consumer apps always kind of like, it seems like, it seems backwards, where like if you can't inspire human behavior based off of token incentives, because then it becomes gamed. Right. So it has to be something else. It has to be something a little bit more sustainable. Right.
Random, boring cross border payments, like Euro USDC, like I don't know. That would be like great. Venmo, that's international, right? Like that works well. That would be cool.
Okay, I want to turn to Solana economics, because we've actually seen some like Solana fees pick up and actually like be pretty sustainable. Where do you find Solana so like in Ethereum, when I got into Ethereum, the monetary policy was we issue 5 Ether per block, and then it got changed to 3, and then it got changed to 2, and then EIP 1559 was introduced, and then proof of stake was introduced, and that's like the last update that there's been. If you had to like map Solana's arc in terms of its like economic sustainability, where are we on that arc and like what's ahead of us?
I think what's different is that like, so a bunch of validators compete on commission. So for users at stake, they pick the lowest commission validator and they basically experience no dilution, right? Like, but there is some dilution because a bunch of the tokens are unstaked. So those are the folks that are effectively paying this like kind of transfer wealth from everyone that's staking to unstaking, and validators take a little cut of that in between. it's hard to tell like how much like users are impacted, because the warm and the cooldown and warm up period on Solana is really fast. So it's like 2 days, one epoch basically. So even if you're like a big fund and you're trading, you would probably keep, you know, 80% of your SOL staked and the whatever you're using for trading unstaked, right? So then you're kind of experiencing minimum dilution, or effectively like it's, for whatever reason, 69% of the tokens are staked right now. If everyone staked exactly 69% of the tokens, you'd be no dilution, because you effectively like, right? Like it's all moving from one bucket to the same to every person. So like, I think that that pain is actually like managed by people pretty effectively, because the warm up and cool down period is so fast on Solana. So like, but like when I argue with you online, whether that, like on Twitter, the posts are like, there's not enough room to like explain the nuance of that. Yeah. But like, you're not wrong that inflation is a thing and it is diluting some people. But how much, I think there's a lot of nuance to figure out how much of that is. What I know is that like a clear cost to the network is the hardware. So like every validator, every RPC node, all of those have to be paid with real money, just like you pay for electricity to mine blocks. But like the difference between Bitcoin, the cost of hash power, and the cost to run the Solana computer is like a million X, right? But like, I think for the network to be sustainable, the fees that you get from running it have to cover the total cost of the hardware. And I think like the fees right now are maybe like 50 million a year, and the cost of the hardware, depending on the provider and all that stuff, is like maybe between 10 to 20. So I think the fees have passed the cost of the hardware, so that you can say that it's sustainable.
Global cost of maintaining the Solana network is $10 to $20 million.
It depends how you count it, but like if you took the cheapest possible like node, 350 a month, and you multiplied it by 3,000 nodes, it actually comes out like to around 10. But like people are not going to take. There's lots of different other infra costs, and people will like pay for the more expensive ones, right? So you kind of like, maybe it's twice as much, but like it's also a bunch of nuance there, right? Like RPC nodes that like Magic Eden uses don't need to be paid for by the network, because they have a business that makes money off the state, and they will pay for those machines and count it as an expense. But it is providing some security to the state to have those replicas. So like how you count all this stuff is complicated. How you like attribute the earnings from MEV that Jito has is also complicated, because effectively any value that a block producer gets from the network incentivizes them to acquire more stake.
Right.
Right. So like that could be like all those incentives combined are like the positive stuff going into the network. All the costs are the negatives. I think right now the positives outweigh the negatives, but again, there's a bunch of nuance there. But I think like ultimately these networks have to capture a lot more value to be competitive to like profit per market cap with a tech company. If we have to actually like compare those two things, unless you believe there's some other reason to value these things higher. I don't. I think ultimately like there's got to be like value created for the world is sometimes risk-free asset price at the treasury is equals like our like total value of the system. I think that fundamental function works for everything. And like where that value capture occurs in the future, I think, is if the network can handle many different hotspots, like thousands of them concurrently, and then the economic costs of those hotspots go up, and like the kind of fees that you're seeing now on the network, if you go to Solana Compass, you see that like priority fees on the chart are now like the biggest thing. Base fees you can't even see, and vote fees are like barely like visible. They're still visible, but much, much smaller portion. So like in a world where Solana is sustainable and is like valued and capturing value at a higher rate, is a world where there is lots of hotspots. You know, and the network can handle many concurrent hotspots at the same time, and those economics are captured by the protocol.
And by captured by the protocol, do you mean payment to validators or burn, soul burn?
This is the big question, is I don't know if that matters. I know a lot of folks in Ethereum want to do the burn, And there's good reasons for that. I don't know if it matters over the long term. This is like the big unknown.
Sure.
Like, I don't know if it matters.
I will say that like all of the Ethereum people will like say, hey, do this, do this, do this. And it will be very much in line with like what Ethereum is. Like, why should you do the burn? Well, because Ethereum does the burn. And, you know, We have ultrasound.money and we like to look at that website. But the thing is, like, if you keep on listening to the Ethereum people, they're just going to tell you to become Ethereum at the end of the day. And at some point, like, that's not helpful.
Right. Right, like, so like the argument that the burn doesn't matter is that like within the black box of the whole network, right, you have the negative externalities you have to pay for to run the computers, all that stuff, and then you have the positive externalities where I like earned my paycheck from driving an Uber and then I used it to pay for the fees on the network.
Right. Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if that fees burnt or is distributed to everyone in the box, or like what happens in the box, how those numbers move around, do not change the weight of that box. Like, it's like digit, it's like accounting in the computer. Who cares if you burn it or not, or like whatever. I don't think it matters, like, at the end of the day.
I think it doesn't matter at the end of the day to make the box function, like whether you give it to validators or you burn it, like the box can function in both strategies. But I mean, like, what you choose to do does change the output of the system, right? And so like the whole Ethereum perspective is like, you burn it because ETH is money. And the Solana perspective is like, you want to minimize that because Solana is like an applications platform. And it's all about...
Well, I don't care about the burn of the token. What I care about is that like the fees like don't spike without reason. So like what breaks Solana is that like, because it's not we don't have a layer two, like layer twos are not on the roadmap. Like you can build layer twos in Solana, but the whole point of the single unified state machine is that you don't need them. Right. And if you have like DeFi ARBs increase the cost to access the network to have to outbid the cost of the DeFi ARBs, it means that payments have to have a separate app chain.
Right.
Like, and I'm like, okay, well then just make them all Celestia rollups or whatever. I don't care. then it doesn't matter, right? Like, I think if you can't solve the economics, the isolation at the economics level, then the premise of Solana doesn't work. I think you need like some burn to prevent like weird spam attacks where validators like spam themselves and like for free and can like price out users. A bunch of stuff with 1559 is actually really, really clever ways to prevent that. Right. But I don't know if you need the burn for capturing value, like, because the burn is very, very different from Apple getting dollars and hoarding those dollars that they can spend later at any given time to like build more products, right? Like Ethereum doesn't have that like dollar budget. When you burn the ETH, you cannot spend it in the future. It's gone.
Well, that's not how I would describe it.
If you save the ETH, you can't, it's pointless to save it or burn it. Like if you like convert it to dollars, that would be interesting and different.
The idea of the burn is that you burn the ether and then you give yourself tolerance to issue that ether again later. Right. And so
at a later date, you're in a totally different environment. And
right.
if shit hits the fan and everything is tanking, right, versus the dollar, you're not actually hedged to be able to issue more. You're like in a death spiral. And if you issue more, you die. Like the question on Ethereum shouldn't be, do we burn the ETH or do we give it to some validator or a public goods thing? It should be, do we convert it to dollars and keep this like other asset that is completely decoupled from Ethereum in case shit hits the fan?
Yeah, but you can't have that because these are like trustless economic systems. That's what like the Terra Foundation, the Luna Foundation guard was like, yeah, we're going to have like Bitcoin, and whenever we need to defend the peg, we're going to deploy the Bitcoin.
The goal isn't to defend the peg. The goal is to pay engineers to like make it better later. Well, that's a totally different thing.
You know Kevin Iwaki?
Huh?
Do you know Kevin Iwaki?
Don't remember him.
He's the founder of Gitcoin in the Ethereum ecosystem, and he made this like EIP proposal. This is like awesome, like really awesome Ethereum lore. He made this like Ethereum EIP proposal to like have 10% of block rewards go to fund like public goods. And like, how could you argue with that? Like we all love public goods in Ethereum. But it actually like created like a pretty big, not like civil war, cause like one side won very, very quickly, but it was all about like the credible neutrality of like where we send the ether that's captured. And the idea is like, if we send it to Gitcoin, well then, you know, Gitcoin today wants to fund public goods. But what happens when like if Gitcoin just becomes like a vector for control?
Change it.
Yeah, but then you're changing too much, right? Like you can.
No,
you
need we have cryptography, which is the tool that the rest of the world, 10 billion people are going to use to coordinate decisions, much more difficult than where the burn goes. This is like the magic. You guys
like
are
a shelling
too
fence
pessimistic.
Thing, right? No, it's like this is like the whole like cockroach chain file of Gadriel is the metaphor that Vitalik uses, which is like, yo, you don't mess with that because as soon as like you just solve that by changing it again in the future, all of a sudden you have like a political and governance system.
But the whole point of like cryptography, right? What we're building is fundamentally is to connect 10 billion people, right? So they can all coordinate decisions instantly, globally, and like do much more like powerful things than like funding open source software.
Yeah, I think there is like maybe an opportunity for ungovernance, though. So like there is like we can find systems that are totally resonant with every single human. But like what's that one line? It's like democracy is the worst form of governance except for all the other ones. It's like one of the best forms of governance is like not having any governance. And so like that's the Ethereum perspective is like you don't mess with the block rewards because that becomes a vector for political capture.
I don't disagree, and I would not recommend anyone try this on Solana because I think it's way too complicated too. But like I think it's a missed opportunity, I think.
I think this is like one of the big dichotomies between like the Ethereum perspective and the Solana perspective. And I would actually like camp
and
Ethereum.
And I don't speak for all of Solana. This is just my opinion too, right?
I actually think on this part of the spectrum, like Ethereum and Bitcoin are actually closer together than Ethereum is to Solana, where like money is an app and it's honestly like one of the most important apps. So this is part of like the bankless thesis that we've been like pounding around for a while, where like we in crypto are here to make new monies. And so like the Solana idea of
disagree. I think Solana folks very much in the same camp. There was this like, again, people started talking about like forking off the FTX estate and it was like quickly squashed by everyone. Right. There was like a instant immune response that like property rights are sacred. Whatever happens, like the state is sacrosanct and we do whatever we can to preserve it. And that it didn't come from me. It literally came from the ecosystem. So I don't think it would be possible for Solana to do this either. And I feel like it's a missed opportunity for somebody to think bigger and be like, the world is like very complex. What we're building is actually to like empower people to do very, very complex governance stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can do it. It's just going to be hard and we can figure it out. But like,
so I get people that like just want to be like, believes in property rights because that's like a core tenet of crypto. If you don't have property rights in your block space, then what is your blockchain even for? But I don't see the same area of emphasis from the Solana community as being interested in like money and the concept of money and its role in the world.
That I think is like, maybe a very nuanced way to look at it, but like, I think that the idea of like collecting the fees and then spending them is against, at least to me, rubs against my idea of like property rights. Like it feels like I'm being taxed and then somebody else benefits, right? Like it's like,
collecting the fees and then spending them
Spending them on like arbitrary governance decided things doesn't feel true to like being a fully crazy property rights libertarian, which we all
So I would agree with that. So like Ethereum, Ether collecting fees and then burning it, and rather than deciding that like this public institution is better than that public institution, feels good in terms of like no one's rights are being violated because everyone's being treated equally.
Correct. And I feel like most of the Solana community would agree with that sentiment. Mm-hmm. Like we all like to LARP as libertarians, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
But I think like reality is that like there's far more complex things in the world and like you want to solve them. And like, I think cryptography offers like a way to like really transform governance and do all these things that we all dream about in the post crypto world. And like, if we are too afraid to do them ourselves, there's no way the world is going to do it. Hmm. So like at the same time, like while I like agree, hey, text, don't do this, but like, I wish somebody would do it.
Do you
maybe
think
Cosmos people will do it. I don't know.
Are you like advocating this as like a thought experiment, as like this is worth thinking about? Or do you actually think like we could make a system of money that has governance as a component of it?
I think if we did, it would be far more powerful than one without it.
That's very, very Keynesian of you.
Yeah, I think like human intelligence, I'm like very optimistic on human intelligence, human goodness, their ability to like, given enough communication, come to the right decision. I'm very optimistic on that. I think it's a very hard problem to solve. And like, I wish somebody was solving it.
But it would be a first, I would say, for humanity to solve that problem.
No, I think we've done it like
human governance over money and governance is like the meta problem of like the human species, right?
Like the world's like US is not too terrible, right? Like most of the places that we choose to live have pretty decent governance. There's definitely places that don't, but like a lot of trial and error, people have figured out like most of the best practices.
Okay, so this is what I was going to bring up with the whole like, I think the Ethereum, again, you don't speak for Solana, you are one member of the Solana, perhaps a very important one, but a member nonetheless. This is where like, if that is like a perspective to apply to like, and I do see this in like broader Solanas, like they don't emphasize the role and importance of money in the same way that Bitcoin exclusively does and a large part of Ethereum definitely does.
Yep.
And because like the last time we had you on Bankless, like we asked you like, is Sol money?
Yeah.
And you're like, Sol's not money. And to us, I'm like, that's the thing. We start there and we expand outwards. But without your base chain becoming money, then you can't expand outwards from
that. Yeah, so that I agree with you. I don't think it matters to Solana devs or community if all the volume that was happening on there was going against the wrapped ETH pair, everyone would be just as happy. Like, holy shit, we got it to work. Everything's like working.
Really?
Yeah.
If ETH was the unit of account in Solana, you think Solana can be like, nice, cool, great.
Yeah, because like the message bus works. It's coordinating state. Everyone is like paying very low cheap fees and everything's working.
Look, as an ETH maxi, I would love ETH to be the unit of account inside of Solana.
That would be awesome. Whatever. Like, who cares? Like, it's like no different than USDC. It's not like I'm like competing with Jeremy Allaire and like money adoption. I want to help him.
Is that, right? Is this a minority or majority opinion, would you say, of the Solana community?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. This is a good question. I think like people become token maxis because a lot of their like faith and like kind of all these things and what this technology can accomplish in the future are all wrapped into this like one thing. And then like it becomes like, I think it's harder to build an NFT marketplace for like whatever quacks that would trade against USDC versus one with Sol, because you're trying to attract the super Solana maxis that are all like, you have that like, and this is where I think the money meme starts to roll. Is that like once you start building other functions on top and your initial customer base is like all the maxis of that particular like L1, they're all going to use that token. But like, I don't fundamentally believe that there's anything I can do like as an engineer or programmer to make that happen. It's a meme.
Sure.
And like, I think like, I honestly think that if ETH was the biggest trading pair, like the whole idea of like Solana's blockchain and Nasdaq speed, that would be the narrative and meme. Nobody's going to talk about Sol as money, and nobody does, right? I don't think you see that sentiment on crypto Twitter as Sol as money. So like, I don't think much would change in the community if that was the result. which is cool.
I think if was more, if ETH was like the unit of account inside Solana, and like when I went to like Tensor to go like buy another Mad Lad and it was denominated in ETH, that would be like the greatest Ethereum Solana handshake moment of like all time.
They could literally do that and do the trade exchange through Jupiter for zero fees. Like, you wouldn't
know
what
happens.
What's
the fastest way to get ETH on Solana these days? Is it Wormhole?
It's probably Mayan Bridge is like a wrapper on top of Wormhole that has nice UX. Or like, I think Jupiter probably has a kind of a bridge wrapper too.
Cool. All right. As soon as I see a marketplace with ETH denomination, boy is going to go shopping.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody should like, oh man, I'll ask the Tensor guys if they can detect if you have MetaMask installed.
And oh, they can redenominate to ETH?
Yeah. Redenominate an ETH. check how much MetaMask you have, like how much ETH you have, and like past a certain threshold, you redominate.
Right. Yeah, we do have the Tensor guys on in January in 3 weeks, so maybe I'll just ask them then. Anatoly, when we hang up this phone and it's 2 p.m. on Tuesday, December 19th, and what are you going to go do inside of Solana? What are you going to go work on first?
I'm writing docs, alignment docs.
That sounds awful, to be honest.
It's actually great. I'm writing
like alignment docs actually kind of makes it seem like you're doing some of the stuff that Vitalik does when he writes on Vitalik.ca, which is just like broad vision, broad vibes, everyone else go implement it kind of strategy.
It's more specific than that. I'm like, this is the final state of these specific implementation components. Mm-hmm. And this is how like they should look like. And I think this is the effect it'll have. And it's not to say that like that's the final state, but at least I'm giving people like a North Star and a reasoning behind it. And they're super smart engineers. What's great is that they will hear me out. They will not listen to me just simply because I said something. Mm-hmm. So like that forces that discussion, and like people will like comment, and like, so these are like kind of like what a Solana like the final state looks like kind of stuff. And you can go and read all this on like Sollinked, which is like this one dev built me like a little web platform where I can charge people USDC. I use USDC as money to access my email and my blog.
Oh gosh.
Should I have it? I'll ask him to add ETH. I will.
Yeah, it's just like it's not very cypherpunk of you to have USDC. I'm sorry. It's just this is the way that it is.
I will have access to my block and Wormhole wrapped ETH on Solana.
Anatoly, this has been great. One last question for you. Let's see. If there's one thing about Solana that you would find is like misrepresented the most by dumb Ethereum podcasters, what would it be?
Actually, things have gotten a lot better. I think like the criticisms.
Wait, about misrepresentation or dumb Ethereum podcasters?
Both. I mean, like, first of all, I think most folks in the space are actually not as dumb. There's really awesome people in the space, right? Like, and I think what's gotten better, and this is like the Ethereum immune response, is that like people will initially reject everything, just like Bitcoin people, but then they're smart and curious. And then like you stick around long enough and you kind of tell your story, and everyone's like, oh, you got something interesting there. And then like you start getting this exchange of ideas going. And I think, it's the criticisms have gotten way better in the sense that they're like, yeah, we need to fix the stuff. And like, there's a plan to fix it.
Cool. Well, Anatoly, thanks for coming on Bankless today. I appreciate it, my man.
For sure. Thank you.
Bankless Nation, you know the deal. Crypto is risky. Ethereum's risky. Solana is risky. Tech stacks of this nature, they're all risky. You can lose what you put in. We are headed west. This is a frontier. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.